Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Forest Arts, New Milton. Please welcome a man whose journey was held up by horses like he's in the Wild West or something. It's incredible. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. You're much better than last week's audience. Actually, no, it was a few weeks ago now I think about it. That we had this audience in from New Milton. Welcome to Richard Herring's Let's Stop Traffic with Wild Horses podcast. I was hanging around in Lonnie's Angling Centre. Yeah, I've been on TripAdvisor. And Lonnie, they call it Rahalastava. So there we go. They were really amused to have someone called Herring in the Angling Centre. They couldn't believe it because that happened. Welcome to the show. Some facts about New Milton. Ian Wooldridge, the sports writer, was born here. That's for people. Yeah, people. I mean, people in New Milton seem impressed by that, but no one listened to at home is impressed by that. The Labour Party at the last election, at least the local elections, only got 330 more votes than the Pirate Party. It's quite a Tory area, is what I was going to say. The UKIP beat the Pirate Party and Labour. But 66% Tory at the last election. What do you think it'll be at the next one? 89%. We're sticking with him. Bring him back. Anyway, we're here. This is for the Edinburgh Fringe. I'm doing the Edinburgh Fringe this year without going to the Edinburgh Fringe, so this will be going out in August, or is going out in August, or was going out in August, depending when you're listening to it. But we won't talk too much about that. I've saw it on Twitter. Adverts have started coming up now, and I got an advert with a T-shirt design, and it's rules for my daughter that a dad should wear. I don't know why they targeted this at me. My daughter's 8 years old. I hope she's... rules for dating my daughter is... the rules are do not date my daughter. That is my only... Even if you're eight, it's still inappropriate. Number one, be employed. I mean, you know, that's not nice. Number two, if she cries, you cry. That seems... That doesn't seem like a good reaction, as if she cries. Maybe comfort, I don't know, maybe be nice. Three, understand I don't like you. Four, lie to me, I will find you. I mean, this is not the kind of dad I am, I have to say. Lie to me, I'll go, eh. This is the one that interests me. What you do to her, I do to you. It sort of becomes apparent this dad just wants to fuck his daughter's partner. I'm imagining it's a boyfriend, I have to say, for this particular T-shirt. She's my princess, not a conquest. Get a solicitor is the seventh rule. Rule eight, I'm everywhere, which Molly Goodfellow on Twitter pointed out. That's not a rule, that's just a statement. But also, if he's everywhere, he's in the cupboard while the partner is fucking his daughter. So he's looking and going, yeah, what you do to her? I'm going to do that to you. Number 10, get her home early. It seems, after all that, quite nice, isn't it? Number 9, get her home early. I'm not all that. Number 10, know that I don't mind prison. Mainly because there's loads of blokes bumming me. That's just what I want. Just want to bum some blokes. Is that so wrong? It isn't, mate. It isn't. You don't have to have a T-shirt. I didn't buy the T-shirt. I did retweet it, and that's that. They've got what they want, haven't they? If they retweet it, they've got what they want. Anyway, look, let's crack on. That was an attempt at actual stand-up. Imagine that. I was going to say, New Milton was created in March 1888. Maybe time to drop the new. That's what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. My guest this week is probably best known for his appearance on the most annoying pop songs we love to hate in 2007. That's why we've all come out tonight. But what has he been doing since then? Will you please welcome the amazing Marcus Birdman, ladies and gentlemen? Marcus Birdman.
Oh. I shouldn't have sat on that. There we go. Rookie mistake. Don't sit on the microphone.
Don't sit on the microphone.
Hello.
We might be an interesting listen. what were the most annoying pop songs of 2007? Do you remember?
I mean, I don't know. I haven't listened to pop chart music since about 1980.
Right. You must have struggled on the most annoying pop songs.
Yeah.
It's fun to go. Those shows, we've all done them.
Yeah.
They come up and...
haunt you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did one about football. I did one about sport.
Do you know anything about football?
No, I don't know anything about football.
So you just bullshitted my way through.
And I quite enjoyed it. But look, it does come up out every now and again. People say, what happened? Look, it's lovely to see you. You've had... you're one of these comedians, I think, like other comedians, know you and love you and you're fantastic. And you've worked for many years. How many years have you been working?
I started in 2000, so whatever that is. Wow. 23 years, 4 years.
Yeah, 23 years.
Is it?
Well, I don't know. Are we counting
24?
Are we counting 2000 as one of the years? Yeah, we are, 24 years. So, that's a long career. And this year, which we'll talk about later, you've had something that maybe brought you to more public prominence.
Yeah.
You might have enjoyed the rest of the time. But it is that weird thing, isn't it, when you look at some comedians who, like, everybody knows, and then somebody else, you go, that guy's better than those guys? Why is he not better
than... Right, yeah. I mean, I'm an artist.
Yeah, so, is that it?
So none of that matters, you know. Yeah. I'm interested in the work. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I mean that's obviously I'm being facetious, but I really love stand up and I really love trying to get better at stand up more than trying to get famous at stand up, and sort of, you know, I've tried to avoid all that, and in that fame and TV, and I've been very successful in that sense. And I'm fascinated by how it works or how it doesn't. Why. I mean, we were just in the dressing room. Well, one person can say one thing and it's funny, and one person says exactly the same thing and it's not funny.
Yeah.
And why? Why is the difference between mug and cup funny? You know what I mean? And it's endlessly fascinating. I suppose I'm more preoccupied with that than trying to get bloody famous.
But I think also what's in it, because it's a weird in both directions. Like, A, it takes a bit longer to get successful now, I think, than it did in my day. So you'd have a lot of comics have had a bit more time to get good at what they do. Mm. But not many comedians work for 20, a quarter of a century mainly doing stand up.
Yeah, don't they?
Some do, but
it's a long slagging off.
So you become
what we're trying to say is give up.
It's time to, we've all got together. Hang up your gloves, can you bring him down to New Milton? Make it inconvenient for him. And say it's time to.
Have you gathered everybody to here stop? To say this is your life?
But most comedians don't get the chance to become that adept and have that wealth of experience, I think, because if you get snapped up too soon, you just become a presenter or a game show, panel show kind of guy.
Yeah.
And so that's your strength, is that you've had this quarter of a century worth of experience, and like we were talking backstage about being a club comedian and being able to do Edinburgh shows, which you do both, and like most people can do one or the other, or have a go at one of the one they're not so good at.
Well, I was, as we were discussing, I kind of admire someone who can be put in any audience, whether it's the Squaddies one night or the Women's Institute the next, or and still kind of perform and find a way to navigate around that audience. And that's just what I admire. And I admire hugely all sorts of comedy, and especially all sorts of comedy that I don't do, I mean, I really like a kind of Harry Hill or the Boosh, just ridiculous kind of stuff, and partly because I just can't do it. But I like comics who, as I say, can. Well, one of the things, because I went to art college, and I think one of the things I objected to with art college is how esoteric that world is, almost in that sort of, if you need to ask, you'll never know. And what I like about stand-up is that you've got to face down the thickest idiot in the room and still. I wasn't looking at you.
He's over there.
He's over there, is it? I am blind in one eye. So and make it work for that person as well as the most informed person. And because I have an objection for that, just this, it's for the rarefied few who can understand this. I like the idea of an art form that anyone can understand. Yeah. The flip side of that is that you've got to deliver it to morons quite often. Nice to see you. Now,
I think we've got we got some similarities in our background. I'm not. You're very fantastic artistically, which is not in my wheelhouse, and we may talk about that later. But you grew up with. Your dad was a chaplain, right? I mean, he's a. Was he ever a vicar, or is he sort of a...
Yeah, he was in the last bit. So he was a naval chaplain, and then he became a chaplain of a private school where I went to. So, like what you were saying, the similarity is that we were at the school that our fathers were...
Working in.
And when he retired, he then became a kind of village chaplain.
Right, yeah. Okay.
In Wookie Hole, so the other end of Cheddar.
Wow, that's interesting. In fact, the mortal enemies of Cheddar.
Is it?
Because they've got better caves than us.
But
we can't admit
well.
That. We have to say we're the best.
The blood and the crypts of the Mendips is going on there.
It really is. But so my dad was, an authority figure, but also we was brought up in a religious family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So is that similar thing? And both of us have obviously turned against that ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And how's that going for you?
it's all right. I haven't reverted back yet.
Yeah, good.
As you get to the end of your life, that's when it really counts.
When you look staring down the mirror, that's when you recant. Please don't do that.
Although, we will get onto this, but we've both been through experiences where we maybe thought about death, and I didn't start praying to God. Going on to the anesthetic.
That's a relief.
so that's interesting. Do you think, there are quite a lot of comedians who come from either like having a bishop as a father or a head or a teacher, a headmaster as a father. I wonder, do you think it's a reaction? I mean, I did a whole show about this.
I've done a show about it as well. I mean, I think it's a bit psych what sort of number one in it to kind of go, you're following in your father's footsteps.
Yeah.
But I think, I make a joke that I kind of you know, my father's a vicar and I'm a comic. Both of us get up in front of rooms full of strangers and lie to them to make ourselves look big and clever. But he gets a lot more sex, you know. So, yeah, I suppose the similarities. Yeah. And I suppose from a default setting, you see your father get up on a Sunday and preach or talk to an audience, and it's natural to you, or not unnatural to you. That yeah. seems to make sense, or rather than you know that's probably hardwired in your DNA. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. But what do you think about? I mean, also, if with the unusual circumstance of being at the same school as your dad, I wonder whether like it's a little rebellion to be funny against someone in order to go, you know, oh, you're, I don't know if it's the same as your dad being their master, your dad being the chaplain. I didn't go to the kind of school where we had a chaplain, so I don't know what kind of...
Didn't you?
What
godless place did you...
in Cheddar, I went to Cheddar, so at Kings of Wessex. But, you know, whether that need to rebel against the authority, whether that need to be seen to be funny. I mean, I don't think it's true of me. I think because I investigated and realised I was like this way before. Yeah. I only got anywhere near this.
I certainly don't think I needed. It was a need to be funny.
No,
I think there was a need to. There was definitely a need to break out of that kind of mould. I mean, I think it was. I was about 15 before I realised that not everyone's father was a vicar.
Right.
I guess one's normal is. One's normal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't realise that maybe that's quite an unusual situation to be the son of a vicar or preacher man or whatever. And I was like, oh, yeah, maybe that's quite unusual. And then I think I was very religious. I remember having a relationship with God, talking to God. And then I remember also pretty early on trying to dismantle that.
Yeah.
And it's been my life's work, not for so long, not recently, because I put it to bed, but to dismantle the whole God belief, Jesus is following me bit.
Yeah.
And that's my proudest thing, to get rid of it.
Yeah.
To jettison it.
From yourself?
Yeah. I haven't managed the world yet.
No. Oh, you're dead.
But I'm trying.
I mean, I'm trying. I joked in Christ on a Bike, my show, about religion, was, you know, trying to convince my parents not to be religious.
Did you?
Just at the end of that, you know, they've got their whole life and then they recant and then they die and they find out they were right all along and it's too late. But, you know, people obviously, I mean, you know, I think you... I'm sure it's probably true of your dad as well, but, you know, my parents, I mean, my mum has lost her religion a little bit, hopefully thanks to me. But, you know, they're good people and they're good Christians. And
they're still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, my father died, so I think that's... that. Yeah, it was a very... So I think, like yourself, I think you just said, my father was pretty authoritarian.
Yeah.
And endorsed by God.
Yes.
So it wasn't just like dad going, don't do that. It was dad and God saying, don't do that. So it was quite a heady... mix to try and get out of under, and I think I felt for so long, if I had an alternative view to that, that I was being very deviant.
Yeah,
you know, and I was like, I might have intellectually gone, I don't think that's right, I don't believe that, but I always felt like I'd strayed from the path somewhat. And it was weird. I went to Israel and Jerusalem when I was in my mid 20s, and it took going there and seeing some of those places, you know, the Mount of Olives, or where Mary ascended into heaven allegedly, or the, you know, the Sea of Galilee, all these places that exist, and speaking to people who had no relationship to Jesus, because they were Muslims or they were whatever it was, and they weren't deviant, or they weren't like wrong-uns, or they weren't because their parents were just godless. They were quite devout people, but they knew as much about Jesus as I knew about Muhammad, which was next to nothing. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's a quirk of geography or fate. Yeah. It's not a decision that I've sort of naughtily made to go, I don't want to deal with Jesus anymore. You can have no relationship and it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a massive revelation.
Sure. Sure. It is, you know, it is interesting that they do, even when I did Christ on a Bike, I was 33 when I did Christ on a Bike.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was still a part of me thinking, oh, you know, I shouldn't be doing this. And I'd
really?
Long, you know, long ago left it behind.
Because you might be smited down.
Yeah, there's still a part of me that's, you know, because it's if it's ingrained in you, you know. Mm. I know, my family were not, they weren't like fire and brimstone or anything, you know, it was all, they were nice, but it was, it's still when, if you tell a kid something, they're going to, it's a very hard thing to shake.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, that is interesting, but there's so much to talk to you about because, you know, you've, again, slightly similarly, but I think your experience is worse than mine. You have been through like some quite big health issues in the last, well, a couple of times. So the first time was quite a few years ago, right?
Yeah, so I've had two strokes, the first one being 12 years ago now, which was a fairly mild stroke. I think I lost a bit of eyesight, but I was 40, yeah. And I think actually the impact of that wasn't great because I think I thought it was a one-off. I was very healthy, and in fact I was training for a half marathon at the time, and it felt like it was an accident almost, not an accident, but like a one-off.
Yeah.
And so psychologically that impact didn't really happen until fast forward 10 years and I had another one and I can't really play that game of like, this is a one-off.
Yeah.
Clearly something's happening.
Sure.
And so I have to address it. And the impact was worse. I lost half of my eyesight and I think I lost a lot of sort of my marbles because it was very scary, and I realised what was happening because of my previous experience. It woke me up, and in real term, and I experienced the stroke.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, I can't do this again. You know, please don't. You know, and I make a joke. I felt the same way when Jumanji 2 came out. I can't do this again, you know. But in all seriousness, it was. I recognised what was going on, and it frightened the hell out of me. And that had more psychological impact as well as more physical impact because the injury, I suppose, that losing half of my eyesight was more impactful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's confronting your mortality, right? Obviously, you go through this stuff. But it's interesting as a comedian that, you know, at least part of your impetus is let's do a show about...
Well, I mean, you know yourself, and this is a horrible thing to admit, but, you know, something bad happens to you, it's probably less than 0.5 of a second before you think, oh, this will make a good show, right? It is, isn't it?
It's
a tragic thing to admit, but it is that you go, I suppose, because you're so keen on being creative and being artistic and pushing something out there and expressing yourself. And here's something monumental that you can really get yourself stuck into.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when you should be preoccupied with one's health, you sort of go, oh, there's a routine in this, you know.
But also comedy is a way of coping. I mean, I found it very useful for that year and going through the operation and going through the aftermath of it and you know, with the bit when I thought I might die as well.
Yeah.
It wasn't all funny, but by being able to make light of it and look on the funny side of it, I think it helped. Not long term. I don't think it's a long-term solution. And I think the next year I then had more trouble kind of, you know...
actual medical health's the long-term solution, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess it's the long... I mean, it is a long-term solution of... looking at the positive or looking at the bright, try to find the funny or try to find the positive. I think you've got to, I almost think you've got a decision to make of whether you try and find the positive or allow the negative to seep in.
But with this, something, you know, you're powerless, right? I mean, you're powerless against cancer, really. You're powerless certainly against something like you've experienced. You know, this is something that can happen at any point and... So you get power over the situation
by making that decision.
By making that and being in control of it.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, in the only way that you can control it, because I think you realise I didn't have a stroke that was related to health, you know, my lifestyle.
No.
It was literally random. So I have, you know, it wasn't like I was really on the GAC or anything like that, and I can control that. I was doing nothing wrong. So yeah, you perhaps, without wanting to be overly flowery, you realise that you're slightly a shit bobbing on the waves, and so therefore what you can control is your reaction to that.
Yeah, and I think, as with all these things, as with most comedy, just by talking about something, I think it helps you, and I think it helps other people as well. You know, people will have been through similar circumstances with someone they love, or themselves. So, it's good. I think, with cancer and with the stroke, you hear those things and you think, oh, that's game over.
Mm.
Without knowing about it, but you do. You think that's going to be game over. So it's good to have people who then have been through it and are still laughing and still happy and still going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't mean to sound sort of lofty, but I think going slightly back to what I said about I see this as an art form and I'm an artist in that sense. And I think I'm trying to create art. And art's about being human and expressing that in the best way you possibly can, to my opinion. It's not necessarily about how much virtuosity you've got on your instrument or how brilliantly you can paint technically. It's about how best you can express yourself, not the skills. It's the kind of how much heart can you show. And I think something like this comes along, and to talk about it is showing heart. It's showing, what else am I doing? Otherwise it's just a joke about biscuits or something, which can be a very funny joke and people can laugh. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But this is a weird thing, and I don't know this. I mean, you all know what I'm talking about. There's a difference between a type of laugh.
Yeah.
How am I going to express this? In a way that, not all music is to dance to. Do you know what I mean? Not all brilliant music is necessarily going to make you dance. Sure. And in the same way, I would say not all comedy is to make people just absolutely side-splittingly laugh. Some of that's brilliant, but sometimes there's a laugh that is really thoughtful or sweet or pensive or kind of like, oh, that was just a really beautiful point or moment. So it's not just about getting the biggest laugh.
No, of course. And
I think, if something real happens to you, like a stroke or, cancer, etc., etc., there's an opportunity to sort of peel that onion, and that's not a privilege, and I wish it's not like I wanted that, but there is a position that you find yourself in that you can roll your sleeves up.
Yeah, no, it is interesting, and yeah, you've done two shows. The most recent show was The Unbearable Heaviness of Nearly Not Being.
Yes, well done for getting that right.
It's a nice start, but difficult to say.
I get it wrong myself quite often.
Obviously this year you've gone on to do Britain's Got Talent, which I would love to talk to you about in a lot of detail.
Yeah.
But the it's amazing to go. That was the I'm sure that wasn't the show that made you get onto Britain's Got Talent exactly. Although the story presumably is a little bit.
I think they like a bit of that backstory of tragedy, probably.
But to go from that to have that title show to going, Simon Cowell's in touch, you're going to be on Britain's Got Talent.
Yeah.
And as a comedian, it's a risk, right, to do a show like this. You haven't done all that much TV over the years,
no.
and this is a very much a certain type of TV show that can really work for some people and can really backfire for some people.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have been, if they'd showed me a list of 100 comedians and said, who do you think's going to go on Britain's Got Talent? I don't think I would have predicted you.
Yeah. But that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is
that's
good.
That's a sort of surprise.
What did you have to talk yourself into it, or did you think I want to do this?
I mean, the Bank of England put the interest rates up. Oh fuck! I've got two mortgages to pay. I think I was quite happy bumbling along as a jobbing comic. I mean, I say it facetiously, but I also say this true. Like, I've actually reduced my ambitions from superstardom to just not getting a proper job.
Yeah.
And I say that sort of genuinely. I'm 52 and I've never had a proper job. I mean, it is. Do you know what I mean? And, thank you very much. But that is. I mean, I work extremely hard at this. I mean, I work very, very hard. You know, this is extremely hard work. Nobody cruises it. But I've wanted to do this, and it was enough to just be a comic. But I was making a living. I raised a daughter, and it was fine. And I didn't have to deal with people in TV. And my experiences of dealing with TV and the people who populate TV had never really been overly positive. Mm-hmm. Forgive me if anybody here works in TV.
They don't. They're in New Milton. Good. They have to drive through horses just to get here.
Be that as it may. And so, yeah, I was very happy with that. And then when I had the stroke and I just started talking about it and I realised that it resonated with people, I just thought, I want to talk to more people about it.
Yeah.
And not in an arrogant way, I hope, and not in a kind of showy, offy way, but I just thought, well, a little bit dead actually sort of thing. Do you know what? I'm funnier and more interesting than a lot of comics who are doing really well. Get out of the way. But also just in a kind of, I've got an interesting story and I can tell it funnily and I want to tell more people.
Yeah.
And so Britain's Got Talent, I mean, they ask all, have you ever been asked?
I haven't been asked.
No. They ask lots of comics all the time. Right? And I've probably been asked 5 or 6 times.
Right.
And always and historically been kind of like, oh, that's naff and I don't want to do that. And this time I thought, well, why not? Also, you know, the game, like I probably like yourself, I think we're probably similar ages, grown up in that era, that sort of Bill Hicks, you're off the artistic roll call if you do an advert or you do something dreadfully cheesy like BGT. But I think the whole game has changed in terms, same with music, you know, you can't survive unless you do an advert if you're a band. Mm-hmm. You can't survive as a comic unless you have a massive following on social media. So doesn't matter how good you are on stage, nobody knows.
Yeah.
And so you have to do slightly unsavoury things like Britain's Got Talent.
But I think I thought what was really interesting about it was that you were authentically yourself. That, you know, and it was, and things are so, you know, admittedly the guy who won this series was a very brilliant actor.
He played a blind actor.
But a very BGT friendly act of lots of noise, lots of running around.
I actually think
that high-vis jacket routine is genius, so I'm not at all criticising him. But you were authentic yourself. It was very, you know, you kept it, in, you know, enclosed, I suppose. It was you sitting down, you know, just telling your story, telling your jokes, and letting them come to you. It was, you know, it's not quiet, but it was...
stand-up is fragile, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, unless you're sort of Lee Evans or something where it's really bombastic.
Yeah.
And I think I vaingloriously thought that I'm so good at this. that if I'll just show them and they'll just let it be.
Yeah.
And then they'll realise the genius. And of course, no. You know, they've mucked it around and chopped it and edited it and took out what I would say were vital elements of a routine to get to for their own narrative. However, and I'm thank you for saying so, and other people have said so, that I think I did retain the Marcus Birdman-ness of it. So that it's not, I didn't go on there and do really cheesy things that I thought would work.
No.
I thought I went on there and did the things that I do that I thought would work in that scenario. If you see,
I do, and you know, and you got to the semi-final, and that's pretty
not bad.
It's really good.
Really good. One clap. There we go.
So, you know, so close to that £250,000.
Yeah, I know. So far. But even, I mean, you know, yeah, you do win a quarter. I mean, I knew so little about Britain's Got Talent. I mean, I never watched it. And they went, what would you do with the 250 grand when you win? I was like, what? I had absolutely no idea that's what happened. But I think, I mean, I don't know whether he gets 250 grand. Does he? You know, he probably has to buy himself out of the contract that's so sort of Motowny that he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, maybe. It's hard,
I don't know.
And how did Simon Cowell take to you? He's not very good with comedy in general.
No, he isn't.
I think.
He took to me quite a lot in the first bit, in the first sort of audition, and then decided he didn't like me in the second bit. Hmm. I don't know.
He should not be judging anybody for comedy. That man, he does not understand jokes at all.
No, that's true.
And often, like someone's doing a bit, a satirical bit, and he
just sort of stops it in the middle.
Absolutely doesn't get it.
He doesn't. I don't know. I mean, it's very difficult to judge comedy full stop, isn't it, really?
Yes.
Because it's very subjective. And often you have to see the whole thing in its entirety rather than just there's a joke. And it's not necessarily linear like that. And I'm not sure he's got a sophisticated mind when it comes to comedy. God, that sounded wanky, didn't it?
It's true. Well, but Amanda Holden said, you know, she said, I haven't got it all.
Who has got a sophisticated mind when it comes to comedy, of course?
Well, you know, Amanda Holden was really into, certainly in the 90s, was really into comedy. She used to come to Edinburgh.
Was she not married to Les Dennis, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Her and Les Dennis came to see me and Stu quite a lot.
Yeah.
And she went in Edinburgh, she would go to loads of stuff.
Yeah.
But then she said something about for all the snowflakes and all the wokery you're doing.
Yeah, I was.
You're not. But, I mean, you're talking about illness and, you know, but you're not being anti-woke.
Well, I didn't want to get caught. While it was nice for her to be effusive about me,
yeah.
I was like, I don't want to be poster boy for that either. You know, I'm not the anti-woke comic at all. It's very weird because I think the commentary was shocking and like edgy. Yeah. And I'm not. I'm really not.
Britain's Got Talent, you
I
are
am for that
little,
scenario,
little
maybe.
Bit.
Yeah, yeah, sure, for that scenario. But I wouldn't have said I was in the scheme of things in terms of sort of, you know, if you think of the sort of Jim Jeffries edge of or Frankie Boyle. I'm nowhere near that.
No.
Someone described me, and I quite like this, someone described me as offensive if you're a moron. And I quite like that because I think because maybe some of the language I use might sound a bit laddie or a bit punchy, but the if you're actually listening, you go, oh, that's almost like he's ironically using that
and also people talking about snow, you know, comedy, you're not allowed to do anything in comedy anymore, and not going to comedy clubs because you absolutely can do anything you want in a comedy club.
Yeah,
pretty much, right? You can still, I mean, you know, you can't be racist and things, but you hopefully don't
such
want
such a
to
shame,
be.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is awful.
We
were just born in the wrong generation.
No.
Only just.
Yes, that's true. I mean, I don't want to be in that, like, yeah, you can't say anything these days. You can, you're right. But I do think culturally it's shifted. I think the people's sensibilities have shifted, and what
I'm not you've for the offended that guy. Let
oh, me sorry, not better or worse, but I think it's maybe just the sense of humour shifted a little bit. I think from when I started, anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean things are different, but I think that's comedy. It evolves, but you can still do. You know, I think the idea that someone could look at you and think, yeah, well done, standing up to the woke, you know, it just shows that they don't understand what... being woke doesn't mean anything anyway. It's like, it's just a way of categorising people together. And if you even think about it...
It's always
seems
to be used as a criticism as well, isn't it? Rather,
you know,
in the same way that, like, PC or being right on was used as a criticism.
Yeah.
We sort of go, well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I want to be that.
Yeah. Well, it's all, you know, it's all, and what do you, and do you feel you've got what you want out of it? Do you feel that, is it too early to say what's going to come out of it?
Probably too early to say. I mean, it's very, I've been trying to get on this for years and you fucking never return my phone calls. No. So.
But the minute I saw Simon Cowell say you were good.
suddenly old Ricky's on the phone. No, I mean, but I understand that scenario I suppose I'm a little bit interesting at the moment.
Yeah.
And a few things have come out of that, and hopefully more will come out of that. That I also, without wanting to sort of blow smoke up your ass, but like, this is far more credible to me than Britain's Got Talent. I'm doing Rosie Jones's disability show in a couple of weeks,
yeah.
And that's where I feel like I'd want to be. And those things would not have happened without doing BGT. So to that end, that's it was a job. Jobs were well done.
Yeah, I think
I didn't enjoy that process at all. But
it's got to be, you know, I'm sure you've got material out of it, and it's got to be an interesting to go through. And I think that often you can stop yourself doing something through the, oh, what, you know, what if I don't look cool, or what will people say?
Yeah,
actually going through any experience, even if it turns out, even if it was a disaster, even if you've been on and they said you're shit, you know, blah, 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 get off. That would still have been an experience, and you'd have experienced all the other stuff, and you'd have got something out of that as well.
Absolutely.
But you know, so it's I think by closing yourself off to experience, I think that's a mistake as a comedian. Maybe you should be saying, oh, look, I'll go and do this thing that I feel uncomfortable about, or I'll do this thing that isn't my comfort zone. But yeah, it's, you know, you get on TV and people see you, and I mean, it's sort of how everything works. It's like when you retweet someone saying something awful and say, look at this awful person, you're doing what they want. I mean, this is a different example, but, you know, they're getting their horrible point of view retweeted 200,000 times,
right.
And they only need 1 in 100 people to go, well, actually, I think that's good. And then they've got, like, you know, 2,000 new followers or whatever. And so it's this, if, as long as you're out there, the people will see you who like you will go, oh, great, we'll go and see that guy. It'd be interesting to see.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why UnitedHealthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So you're touring. You're doing Edinburgh, first of all. So what's the Edinburgh show? Well,
so the Edinburgh show...
This is the Edinburgh... podcast.
This is very much podcast. Edinburgh. I've sort of rebranded the bearable heaviness of nearly not being, because I don't think that title would play very well in the provinces.
Okay.
So I've slightly tweaked it, and there's a bit more of an update. But so, because it was the show that I started in Edinburgh, and I had to leave Edinburgh to have a heart operation last year, and so it was kind of. Come back and finish that, and then I just really like that show, and it's all about that stroke. And to pertain to what I said earlier, I just want more people to see this show about the stroke. So it is that it's slightly updated, but it's the bearable.
So what's it called?
It's called Platinum.
Yeah.
Because I have now half a platinum heart.
Wow.
So I mean that's metaphorical as well as actually literal. Yeah. I mean, wow. God bless the NHS. I mean, that must be worth a fortune.
Yeah. That's got to be, like, you know, that's proper full-on scary time, like, to go into to have that done.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, again, it is that thing where it feels it, and yet the surgery is so good now that, Bob Mortimer talked about this, and, it's, you know, actually... Most people in the old days, you go in for a heart operation. And
heart surgery. You're months of recovery.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, from their point of view, it's that you know they're literally plumbing. They're changing, you know, a hub on your washing machine type thing. Of course, from your point of view, you go, well, I'm having heart operation for the first time. It is scary, and of course carries all of that weight. I mean, to go back to finding funny out of this and finding the positives. I found out I needed a heart operation when I was in hospital, and I was and it's keyhole surgery, so they go through your thigh and up into the chamber of your heart, so you can imagine, you know, what you need, the precision. And I was due to meet the heart surgeon who came into my ward and tripped over my heart monitor. I mean, I kid you not, and fell flat on his face and pulled the leads out of the heart monitor. Right? So you've got, it all went like this. And then his little head at the end of the bed going, "Hello, I'm your heart surgeon." And you're going, "Oh, that, you know." So that didn't fill me with a great deal of confidence. But I, you know, they, for them, it's routine. Yeah. And which, you know, in the abstract is encouraging. But it's still, yeah, someone's digging around in my chest.
Yeah, and turning you into a sort of robot.
Cyborg. Yeah.
It's exciting.
I don't go off. I was really disappointed that I don't set off, you know, the hot airport.
Really?
Things. No.
Well, there's a little tip for any terrorist. Just make your bombs out of platinum.
Platinum. Who's funding that, though? That's expensive.
It is.
Even the Saudis can't afford that.
And so you're touring the show as well. Is that in the autumn?
Yeah, so I start that in Edinburgh, and then I tour in the autumn, kind of everywhere. Yeah.
Well, which venue are you on in Edinburgh for people who are listening?
I'm on the Liquid Room, the annex of the Liquid Room, for the first two, from the 5th to the 20th, yes.
Okay, what time?
6:45.
Lovely, that's a pretty good slot.
Yeah.
It's nice and early. There's a lot on later, there's a lot more competition, I think, and also it's just nice to, you know, you're in your 50s.
I know.
Nice to get back.
I can put my feet up a little bit. Yeah.
So
that's absolutely true. So tiring.
I've said this a lot, but when I did my 50s show, by the last week, it was in the Pleasance, which is down a hill and up a hill, and I had to sit at the bottom of the hill for like 5 minutes every night just to build up the energy to walk up the fucking hill.
I can imagine.
And then do an hour long show.
They're steep hills.
Yeah.
Have you ever done a 2 week run?
I've not in Edinburgh. I've always
done
the whole
secret,
thing.
Man.
Yeah.
Like, I do 2 week run and take a day off every week.
Yeah.
So,
it's good.
Because, you know, like, which you would do in other festivals, where Edinburgh is this crazy thing of doing a month.
Yeah.
It's obscene.
Yeah, I haven't with stand up, I've always. But it's partly just to make it work economically, right?
Yeah,
the more shows you do,
then
you can make it work.
Yeah.
I did the podcast last year for 10 days, and that was. But it was, I was exhausted by that as well.
Yeah,
but it's hard doing this.
Yeah.
It's harder than it looks.
I can feel the pity coming from...
Looks like I'm just sitting around talking
to two old bastards just sitting on a chair banging
just
on.
Really hard,
hard work,
It's very hard. Let's ask you some emergency questions.
Okay.
See how that goes. What is that? I'll be interested in this. You have a man who's lived... I imagine you're quite a romantic man, but we'll see. What is the most ludicrous thing? This AI wrote this question. I want you to know that first.
Oh, okay.
This is a good question from AI. What is most of them aren't. What is the most ludicrous thing you've ever done in the name of love?
Had a child. Next question. That's a ludicrous thing to do, isn't it? Have a child.
Keep on finding it so strange.
How many have you got?
I've got two. Every time I look, they keep growing and changing.
You don't need two. I mean, that's a rookie
too
error.
Too many, that was
a mistake. One will do. You tick all the boxes.
Yeah. Are you through? Is it through? How old's your...
She's 18, so she's pretty much baked. And out.
I mean, except...
She is baked quite a lot of time, actually. You laugh.
It's crazy. Just they get big. They're little... Then they just keep growing, they get bigger, and it's the same person.
Yeah. Does she look like you?
I've got a boy and a girl. She really looks like her mum, but she's got like, there's a big bit of Richard Herring right in the centre of her face. I feel sorry for her. I mean, I think it's like you've taken the best of both of them.
Yeah.
No, luckily she's going to be tall, which is, she hasn't got that from me.
Yep.
She looks like a mum, really. But the boy looks quite like me, I think, and is like I was.
Yeah, my daughter's very like me.
Yeah.
Which is both quite rewarding and troubling.
Yeah, and a sort of punishment for being
you. Yeah, absolutely.
You did this to your parents. Now you get it.
Now
it comes.
Yeah,
I'm just hoping I can die so I can escape the punishment. Let's see what else we've got for you in here. The first one, I don't know if I've ever asked anyone this question, and you'll see why when I ask it. Do you think it would be better if the human race just wiped itself out? I was in a good mood when I wrote that. That's yeah. me. I wrote that, not AI. That's right.
Which bits of the human race? All of it.
All of the human. Just think of the whole thing. I mean, it's gonna happen.
It's gonna happen, I think, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it would be better for the planet.
Yeah.
It probably will happen.
I mean, it will definitely happen. Yeah. It will definitely happen. Some. And I'm quite pessimistic about the future, but I also just think, regardless of the climate change. We got nuclear weapons. You just from now to the end of human history, no one's going to shoot all those off for a laugh.
Some's going
like,
to.
You just like in the last 5 years, we've had like 10 leaders who you think, yeah, I could see them starting a nuclear war.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's going to happen, isn't it?
It's more of a surprise that it hasn't happened.
It
yet,
is. It is a bit of a surprise. There we go. Comedy, comedy. Someone blew their nose at the end of that, which does help turn into comedy. And
Benny.
That's why we're going to be fine. That's why everything's.
Nice Benny Hill moment at the end.
Because I'm just about to press the button. Oh, I can't kill all of humanity. That can't happen. I asked this in the previous show. If you could go into a chrysalis, dissolve like a caterpillar would, and then come from out of the chrysalis
as anything.
Anything you want to be, what would you choose to come out of the chrysalis? That's what would you. Oh. It doesn't matter. It could be you as altered. It can be something completely different than you. I mean, a caterpillar changes a lot, is all I'm saying.
I'd quite like to have been a professional tennis player.
Right.
I don't know why. I don't play tennis. I watch tennis. But I just. I admire it. And I think I would have. If the fairy godmother, I suppose, is a sort of similar thing.
It
isn't
is.
I'd like to have been a professional tennis player.
Were you sporty?
Yeah, I was very sporty. All that says I didn't play tennis, but I was pretty sporty. And I think I like. I mean, I'm a huge admirer of Andy Murray. And I think the similarities between tennis and stand up are very similar. That it's a sort of mind thing more than it, and you can be winning. you can do 10 minutes and you're blistering through this gig, and then you've got a couple of wrong moves, and suddenly, oh, hang on a minute, I'm on my ass here.
Yeah,
and it's like, can you hold and keep your cool and nerve, and then suddenly you're kind of inch back into a position of power and strength, and so I do think there's sort of similarities there. And I like, I think it's quite a sexy sport.
Yeah, sexy.
Male tennis players are quite attractive.
They are.
As opposed to footballers, who I don't find attractive.
And female tennis players as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I don't want to be a female one, though.
Okay. I might be a female one.
Would you?
Yeah. We could play mixed doubles.
Okay.
Me with, oh, no. Yeah. You've got a metal heart. Would you still have the metal heart? If you were
I think I'd have a proper working, functioning heart. A bit healthier,
If you tap your chest, does it go clink, 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 clink?
No, but you can feel it. You can feel. I've got like a. Do you want to? It's more. It's yeah.
Do you want to feel? Do you want to feel my one remaining?
your one.
Yeah, I could have had. You're allowed to put one in.
Have you got a false one?
No, I didn't put it in.
Because you can get various.
Yeah, different sizes.
Different
textures.
Sizes.
Yeah.
Do you got like one massive ball?
Yeah.
I'd have, you'd want one of them Chinese balls that makes that quite.
And there's also, though genuinely, I've talked, because I do a podcast about it, so I've talked to a few experts and stuff. They're talking about putting like Wi-Fi in there and stuff. It'd be quite good.
Yeah, 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 it'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Bit of ice, it's like one of those ice for cold drink.
Yeah.
That'd be good. one of those toys that makes that when you turn it upside
that'd
down.
That'd be good, yeah. I've missed an opportunity.
You have missed a goal.
Right, let's see if AI has got another question for you. They're pretty weird, a lot of these. If, in an alternate universe, Doctor Who was a reality TV show and you were presented with the challenge of being the first human to travel through a wormhole in search of the Big Mac, how much ketchup would you bring with you to complete the mission? That's why AI is never
really
going to take over my job.
I mean,
that's
did
very,
AI really write
that's
that?
That's AI written by AI. I had put in a few
what
different
did you
things.
Tap in to get that?
I put write a question in the style of Richard, and then I think Richard Herring's emerged with questions. And sometimes a lot of them come up quite boring, like if you were a superhero, what power would you have?
Yeah.
And then I think if you put a verbose one in or whatever, they occasionally comes up with something that I go, oh, yeah, I would have written that. That nearly, I would have written that.
Yeah.
but I didn't.
How much ketchup?
How much ketchup?
Lots.
Would you,
yeah, I like, I'm a ketchup a fan. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not. I don't think it's a question that's going to have. We do now an emergency question special every month where we take all the answers to one question right. that have been, or lots of the best ones, and put that as a 30-minute episode. I have a feeling that,
that one's not going to make it. I don't think that's got a huge amount of repercussions for society, how much ketchup I
although,
have on my...
Although I'm really tempted now to ask everyone that and then put out the episode, people just going, some?
Just to be obtuse.
I don't know. No. Right, one more chance for AI, and then it's back to Richard Herring all the way through. Yeah, that was too... I mean, again, look I'll ask you this one. This one, I have asked this one before. It's similar, but it's funny. If you were stuck in a lift with a sentient jar of pickles that claimed to be your long-lost brother, would you believe him? I like the fact it says him, so it's the question believes it, rather yeah. than it. And if so, would you risk tasting his briny essence to confirm his identity, or would you prefer to remain a cucumber coward?
Yes, no, yes.
So the cucumber coward, I could, that's AI taking my job.
You're a cucumber coward.
Right, back to Richard Herring, where all the questions are reasonable and normal. If you had to do Human Centipede with two other people, but you choose the other people and you're in the middle, who's going up front and who's going behind?
Who's going? Do I have to answer that?
Yes. Yeah. No, you don't have to answer anything.
You've got Pete the Fifth.
Consent is very important in this podcast.
Yeah. How do I persuade them that's going to happen?
Well, then? The scientist is going to do it anyway with three people, and he's kindly given you the option to choose some people.
So it's a fait accompli anyway.
Yeah. So I mean, well, you're choosing the two people, so you know, you're ruining their lives.
Who would it be? Who would it be? Who would it be? What's that?
Persuade them.
I don't want to persuade them.
That sounds like the voice of experience.
You're the last one.
Persuade them. That's even better. If you persuade them to do it. It was slightly creepy way he said it as well. You have to persuade them. And when you've persuaded them, they don't mind. They like it.
They don't mind it. No, I think that's creepy consent, isn't it? That's not consent. I can be the first one.
You're in the middle.
Why do I have to be in the middle?
Because that's the worst place to be. Well, not the worst place to be.
Well, clearly.
But it's the most interesting place to be. Because you have to choose someone to poo in your mouth and you have to choose someone to poo in them. No, I didn't write the Human Centipede.
You wrote
me.
This question, though. I refuse to answer.
Wow, refuse to answer. That's going in the... I think we've already done the... Boo! All right, have you ever seen a ghost, Marcus?
I haven't seen one. Felt one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That was a good night. Yeah, no, I have. I think where I used to live in... I went to Newcastle University and we were living on the end of the... what would have been Hadrian's Wall, the sort of west wall.
Okay.
Big site for sort of ghosty activity. And I was in my... There was a really good room at the top that my flatmate was like, do you want to swap? And I couldn't really understand because my room was a bit crap. And so I went, yeah, yeah. So I was up there. And then I remember one night just knowing that there was someone just literally there in my face. And if I opened my eyes, I'd see them. So I just went, could you go away? and they did. And then I spoke to him afterwards, and he went, yeah, no, there was. I always felt really weird stuff in that room. Right. That's why you've got it. So that could have been someone, one of my other flatmates, I suppose. But I just, and I'm not trying to persuade anyone, but I think that was a ghost. Yeah.
Once again, you were asleep when it happened.
Is that the link?
It's sort of nearly always the link. Yeah. I think it's, but it's something about whatever it is. These things, it's something about that time between dream state and waking state, and
sure,
you know, maybe that, sure, maybe that's to do with your inside, maybe it's to your mind, maybe it's to do with outside, it's to do with your inside, your mind.
But did you ask me so you could rubbish it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, okay, I asked you to find. It's just my way of finding out if the person I'm talking to is mental.
What sort
of
wanker I am?
If you've seen a ghost, you're mental. If you haven't, you're not mental.
So that question is essentially: have you seen a ghost? Wanker.
Seen loads of ghosts, so I'm slightly fucked by it as well, because I don't believe in ghosts, but they're all over the place.
They probably are.
Probably are. Have you ever seen the TV show Ghosts on BBC?
No.
BBC? Oh, it's good.
It's good. That's good.
Watch it. It's good. cool. So look, we haven't got much longer. I was gonna. You've had two motorcycle accidents. Charlie Borman's had two motorcycle accidents at least.
Yeah.
So I like having people. I love motorcycling. Me.
Yeah. Do you motorcycle?
No, I don't. No. I'd like to pretend that I motorcycle.
It's super dangerous. Yeah, it's great fun, but it's super dangerous. Yeah.
Do you still go out on the bike?
No, because I lost half my eyesight. Yeah. I can't drive anymore.
Okay.
So I didn't. But the last one I had, I basically hit an oncoming car and went over the top. I landed underneath a van that put his anchors on, and I broke my leg and I got up. So basically I was looking in the underneath of the white van, and I got up to sort of talk to the person or shout at the person who hit me. And the bloke in the van grabbed me and said to sit down because I'd broken my leg, basically.
Right.
So I was kind of walking towards this other... Right. I don't know what I was going to do. So I think I put... I sort of went, that's not... I've had two now.
Yeah.
Time to hang up your motorcycle gloves.
It does seem incredibly... I mean, like, hey, you sound like someone who's been unlucky, but also quite lucky.
Yeah, I mean,
you've
I've been
very through,
lucky.
So you've had a lot of sort of...
I was talking about this earlier, actually, because I did another podcast, and I've got other friends,
okay,
you know, and I remember when I was younger, I used to ride my bike and close my eyes, see how long I could close them for, just to sort of scare myself,
yeah,
you know, I don't know what that's about, I don't know what that says about me, but I'm quite a risk taker, reckless, and I thought I've had two accidents and now is the time to stop being a motorcyclist.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you've stopped. Yeah, two accidents. I mean, Charlie Borman's still, I mean, his legs are different lengths.
Are they?
Yeah. And he still goes on motorcycles.
Yeah. Well, he's made a career out of it though.
He has.
He's got to keep going.
He does, yeah. He's got to keep going. I sort of admire it in a way, but I'm very chicken and risk averse in those kind of situations, so I would never do anything.
Have you ridden a motorbike though?
I don't think I've ever ridden one.
It's such good. It's very exhilarating.
Yeah, I don't like to be exhilarated.
No, I don't now. I don't. No, you're right. I don't now. I used to love being exhilarated, and then I think I just come back from New Zealand, and people were doing bungee jumps and skydiving, and I was like, I don't need that amount of terror in my life. I do stand up. You know, that's frightening enough.
That's true. Look, people should definitely go and see you on tour. Is there somewhere they can check out your dates?
Yeah, marcusbourbon.com. Marcus is with a K, so everything's on that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and is that, and I mean, as far as you know, as far as you can tell, is everything going okay? Is it your pattern,
health-wise,
and health-wise?
In life.
Well,
I think my health's all right. I think I might need a pacemaker, but that's again pretty routine.
Okay.
But the heart's okay. I'm trying to look after myself.
Yeah.
I've got good people around me.
Good.
So inshallah, I'm all right.
Yeah. Good. Lovely to see you, Marcus, and fantastic to have you on. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Marcus Burman.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming, everyone. I love New Milton. I love the Firestart. You have been listening to Rahulastapo with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Marcus Burman. The music is by Scant Regard. I'm indebted to my producer, Chris Evans, not that one. He's also a nice guy, I expect. I don't really know him. If anything comes out later, it wasn't my fault. Thank you to everyone at the Forest Arts in New Milton. It's a wonderful place. Go and visit whenever you can. There's so much to do. Thank you to the Leicester Square Theatre for organising all of this weekend that I have been enjoying doing. This is a Sky Potato Buzz and GoBusterStripe.com production.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.